So we're here with Suzanne Cook, who is a developer on the CLR team. Your specialty is the CLR loader.
That's right.
Correct?
Yeah.
Tell us about yourself. How long have you been here? What do you do exactly?
Oh, yeah. I've been working here for 6 years. So I've been working on the loader the whole time. So actually, when I first joined, there wasn't a loader team for a few weeks, and then they created one. There was just two of us.
Okay.
And then eventually grew into about 10 developers now. So it's pretty big.
Okay.
A few of us. Yeah. And I work on the assembly loading part of it with the Fusion team.
Okay. So what exactly is the Fusion team? What is the CLR loader?
Okay, so there's a whole bunch of things. I actually created a list just to remind myself of all the stuff we do because there's so many things.
Okay.
The loader does things like engine binding and semi file loading, which is what I do. The CLR setup, metadata, class loader, apt means, versioning side-by-side issues. And then it works with the Fusion team, which a lot of people get confused about who owns what between the Fusion and the loader. But they own things like assembly binding. So they find the assemblies, but once they have found them, then the loader is the one that goes and actually maps them and handles them from there. And they also handle things like download from HTTP, and they manage the GAC and version policies.
What's the GAC?
It's the Global Assembly Cache. it's the central location where assemblies are kept so that they can be shared between applications or for versioning purposes.
I'm sure the developers knew that. Yeah.
Well, so you don't have to have them in your local where you install your application.
Yeah, so let's say if you have two applications that want to use the same assembly and you don't want to have a copy in both of their application bases, then you might want to have them in the global application.
And, of course, all the VCL, the assemblies, et cetera.
Yeah, all those are in the GAC.
All in the GAC.
Yeah.
That's why we all can use them. So let's talk about, so your specialty is load, right?
Loader. Yeah.
So you wrote the load method. That's you on that.
So, yeah, I didn't write the original version, but I handle it now. So, yeah, assembly.load, aftermain.load, and assembly class, and assembly name, a lot of related classes. Yeah, I do the code behind that.
And so for everyone who may be confused, let's talk about aftermain versus assembly, right?
Okay. So an aftermain, it can contain multiple assemblies. Context where you can consider it like a mini process. It's not really like that, but that's how we like to have people think of it. And you can it controls where you can find things. So like you can have one application base for aftermain, and so if you have one application per aftermain, then everything you want to load for the application will be in this certain application base, and we'll look there and find it for you. And it can keep it separate from other applications that might be in the same process. Like if you're running ASP.NET, then it would have a different aftermain for each web page that is being loaded by it.
Okay. And can aftermains communicate with each other, share state, or share?
Yeah, there's some limitations to it. Like if they don't get to share the same assembly instances, for example, if you need to use the same assembly, then it gets reloaded in the other aftermain, things like that. But yeah, there's ways to share information. You can pass things between aftermains and make it work.
And of course, one of the motivating factors behind this architecture and the CLR and .NET is to try to alleviate DLL.
Oh, yeah.
So that's still, you can still get yourself in trouble, right?
Oh, yeah. There's always ways to get yourself into trouble.
Okay.
So, but the reason why we chose to use assembly display names instead of file paths, like with the library, is because you can specify a version, and so you're not automatically moved up to the latest version of the assembly. And that's also what the GAC is for, so that you can have multiple versions of the same assembly and choose the one that you're built against instead of getting the latest and being broken by the new changes that were made that you didn't expect. So, yeah, we're working hard to solve that problem.
So, you have a blog, and I see on your blog you recommend use load.
Right? Yeah, use load by display name, so you can specify the version that you want.
And exactly. So here's a different type of question. So are you the only woman developer on the CLR team?
Oh, no. So there's a few of us. Okay. Also, yeah, actually, at one point, I think there were just three of us total, and now there's a couple more, but I think two of them are leaving, so... Mm-hmm. So there's not very many. It's a small percentage.
Sure. Well, throughout the company as well.
Yeah.
And clearly even in computer science in general.
Oh.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, when I was graduating, then there was only two other females in my graduating class. So
yeah.
Out of about 100. So.
Do you think that's changing now?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not... It's very common that I'm the only woman in the room in meetings. And
sure.
So...
I think you're probably the only female developer that we've interviewed at this point.
Yeah, I was looking at the website. I didn't see any other interviews with
developers. Who are also developers for the most part.
Yeah, on this team especially, there's a lot of development when you're in test. You have to know how to use the product, which is for developers. So.
So it sounds like you've been working on a CLR since your career.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of the originals. Yeah, before I graduated even, I came to work here as an intern, and then I came back a few months later after I got my degree, and been here ever since, so
All right. Yeah,
I've been pretty happy.
Now, are there any major changes from 1.1 to Whitby in your world, in the loader world?
Oh, yeah, so
okay.
So there's been major changes to NGen, but for my world, then I've really been trying to make an effort to make it more debuggable just by default. Obviously, in the blog, there's a lot of questions that people have about how to debug their app with their file loading issues, and we're trying to make it so the exception messages are more specific, and you get more information about what the problem was, and we're trying to develop apps to help debug also, so yeah, and just normal additional features that you get in every version.
Excellent. And and Robert, her blog is very popular. I'm sure you read it. Link to it.
All right. Nice.
How has the blog changed developers' relationship with the customer? Because I guess for a while Microsoft's been out in the news groups and developers have come out and talked with customers. But has the blog changed how the team interfaces with customers or listens to them?
So, yeah, I find that it answers a lot of people's questions off that, so they don't have to ask us so many of the same repeat questions every time. So in a way, it actually gives us less interaction with customers. But I have noticed that, a lot of people, it turns out that a lot of people read blogs from various people in .NET, and I'm surprised that when I go out and just talk to different people within Microsoft that they know people on the runtime just from their blogs, and I'm impressed. So, it seems like it's pretty effective.
We've asked this a couple of times. What are some secrets in the CLR that maybe most developers who use your product don't know?
Oh, like what are you going for? I don't know. What other people said.
Sometimes we rephrase the question like, what are the tips to using the product better, or what mistakes do you see customers doing with the product,
The number one problem I see is that people try to just, when they see what methods are available, but they don't understand what they do, they don't read any documentation, they just try things until something works. And, especially with the loader, that might not always be the best thing, because you could have some, for example, loader partial name, the classic thing where it could work now, but in the future when other versions of your assembly ship, then you could be broken because you did the wrong thing. So you need to find out and understand how the things you call work, and so you can tell if they're right for you, and if they're not right for you, don't use them.
True. But something like load with partial name is useful when you don't know the full name.
Oh, yeah,
right?
So that's the trap.
Yeah.
So it seems so convenient, but no, that's not a good thing. That actually causes problems, because if you just use the simple name, you're not specifying things like the public key token. And what happens if there are two companies that have shipped something with the same simple name just because it was such a convenient name?
Now, will GACUtil not throw a warning if you try to install two assemblies with the same name into the GAC? Because it, or is it just, obviously, it's looking at something more telling of the public key. But.
Yeah, it looks at all the components of the display name, so the simple name, the public key token, the culture, and the version. And so you can change any one of those things, and it'll make it a different assembly. You can install them all into the GAC.
So are we going to obsolete low with partial name?
Oh, yes, it's done. That was my number one. I was all excited about getting rid of that as soon as I could.
So it's official.
Yeah, it's obsolete for WinBeam. Don't use it. You should never have used it.
And programmatically, so if I don't know the whole name, there's two assemblies in the GAC, and they're both named Foo, right? And how am I supposed to determine programmatically which one I want to use? So in other words, not that it solves the same problem, but my question is, when you look at what a full name of assembly typically is, it's kind of a hard thing to remember, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember public key tokens. And
yeah,
that, you know.
Right.
So what do I do programmatically in my code to help me get a name of an assembly, pass it to some other method?
Okay, so actually that's something I answered in one of my blogs.
Oh, oops.
So
I'm not a blog reader.
I was ragging on Charles on the way over here. I'm reading the blogs.
See, I got to start reading blogs.
Okay, well, so there's two things. There's static binding where you can just compile against the assembly, and it'll automatically include all the information about the components of the display name that you would need in order to bind to it. Mm-hmm. Or else if you need to load it dynamically, then you can. There's different ways you can give that information. If you don't want to, well, I recommend that you don't try to put together display names yourself because it's hard to remember exactly what each component is, and a lot of times people make mistakes with it. But if you try to type it in by hand, then you miss a character or something. So it's just better to just cut and paste if you absolutely need to do that. So one thing I recommend is if you just need to have the string hard coded for some reason, then you could just look at the output of getctl-l and cut and paste that. But even better is to just not have a hard-coded string.
Sure.
Just the stack references whenever possible. So, also if you are building against different versions that change from build to build, then have a variable that a preprocessor will replace so that you don't have to, you're not tempted to leave the version out.
What's the coolest thing in WinBeam? Or maybe
what's
the coolest three or four things even?
Oh, let's see. it's hard to say. So I guess generics is pretty cool. That's a popular feature, but that's not really my area. But, I guess that in my area, the things I'm excited about is just the better support for debugging, because that was such an issue, and I really worked hard with the doc people to give better documentation to MSDN, and so hopefully when that is released in the future, that'll be a lot better.
Well, also, I mean, you mentioned about the not reading documentation. The thing is with code comments, right? Mm-hmm. And in Visual Studio, it's such a marvelous IDE because when I'm trying to learn some new API, I'll just type in, you know, look at what its classes are, and then if the comments are done correctly, nicely, I get, you know, so load with partial name to tell me, don't use this unless you, you know, whatever.
Okay.
So the inline code comments are a powerful quick way to figure out quickly what some method does or what a type is or what, et cetera. So that's one of the tricks. But yes, always reading documentation.
Yeah.
Very smart. But I, you know, I'm guilty of being lazy, I guess. So how much time do you spend writing unmanaged code?
So almost all the code I do for my work is unmanaged. I just write a little bit of managed code for the managed classes. But if I need to write some dev unit tests, then I always write it in C#. Ah, C# is awesome.
Yes. So you like writing managed code?
Oh yeah. When I do my own projects, then I do straight managed code unless there's some reason I can't. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Because I mean, one of the things that there's a thread going on in Channel 9 right now where people are arguing back and forth about the future of managed code and unmanaged code and the future, you know, basically is Microsoft going to be 100% managed code in the future? Well, typically, probably not, because our core features have to be written in, at a low-level language until the operating system becomes managed, which probably won't happen for a while, you know, down in the kernel, etc. Then people will be writing on managed code a lot. I mean, you just mentioned most of your time you're writing on managed code, you're on the CLR team.
Well, yeah, I mean, the runtime for managed code has to be written a lot in unmanaged, so you can't. But we do as much as we can in managed code, actually. So.
And you really enjoy it, and it's a great, it's a good experience. You don't have to sit there and worry about how to manage your memory,
yeah,
which you're doing most of the time, I would imagine.
Yeah, it totally cuts down on development time, and that's why I wrote it whenever I can.
Sure, but you still need to be a good engineer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't need to think about what you're doing.
Yeah, you can't. Managed code does not solve everything magically. You still have to think. So.
What? You haven't been writing managed code for your entire career then, right? Because it's only been out for 5 years, right?
Right.
So what was the biggest challenge you found getting into the managed world? What were the things you had to switch your thinking on?
Wasn't so much my problem. It's just when I first started writing managed code, it was so new here that nothing really worked yet. And so you had to find some way to work around problems that for features that haven't been implemented yet, so you can get your things done. When I was an intern, then one of my intern project was to write an interop app that had one unmanaged component and one managed component. And for the language I wanted to use, then nothing I needed was ready yet. So I had a little tiny managed component, mostly unmanaged, but it's gotten much better than that. That was years ago.
Sure. So.
For developers who are just coming into the managed world, do you have any tips, you know, or techniques or things that they should read? Or
I would just suggest play with it. Just find some fun thing that you would be interested in coding that's just pretty short, and do that and learn just by doing.
Cool. Good, great advice. What are you working on now? I mean, without giving away trade secrets, I mean, what's your
It's funny how the screens went off right when you asked that.
we're all bugged and we're all
bad. So, yeah, we're in that bug fixing mode right now for our next beta. So we're working on, we just really finished our security bug push.
True.
Just last week, so now we're getting back into.
And that's a good point. I mean, with what you do, with loading assemblies, etc., security is a very important part of the puzzle.
Okay.
What do you? I mean, strong named assemblies, for example, mm-hmm. is it being used widely enough out there in the real world?
Well, it's for me to say because I have a selective view of what customers we have. For me, then it seems like everyone's using strong named assemblies, but I know that's not really the case.
Okay.
So it's hard to tell.
Let's see here. So let's walk through, if you don't mind, for those people who are new to managed code, maybe show us what happens when I load a managed assembly. Like, what's the process exactly? What's going on when I call load and I load some assembly? What's really happening?
Okay, so.
Here, I'll get over here.
So when you call assembly load, then it goes into our managed code, that the loading method that goes and calls into our unmanaged MScrewWorks code. That goes and interfaces with Fusion in their unmanaged code. And they go in and deal with the file system or with Erlang to download it if that's appropriate. And then once they find the file from there, they return it back to us. And then we go and map it and lay out our data structures regarding it. for that assembly, and then we create a managed instance of an assembly, which we return back to the user.
Okay. So Fusion does various checks just to looking for this thing named something, right?
Oh, yeah. So
looks in the gas, process is running that's calling from, that kind of thing.
Oh, so, yeah, that's a common misconception. It doesn't look for assemblies that are already loaded, necessarily. Uh-huh. So if you're just calling load and you're not using the load from context, let's not talk about that, then it just looks in the GAC. That's for file system. And if it's not there, it looks in application base for the app domain. And well, there are other places it could look also, but this is just the typical general. And then if it's not there, then Fusion fails, and we have an assembly resolve event that we raise ourselves and ask the user for it.
Okay.
And if the user can't find it either, then we can.
And you just throw an exception, mm-hmm. and say assembly not found exception or something.
Yeah, about that.
So I'm assuming there's also an assembly unload. Is that like equivalent to say a process.exit that it's just destroy everything, or does it wind things down in a safe way?
Yeah, you must be thinking of aftermain unload. So
aftermain unload.
Yeah, so it does do a lot of unwinding that has to handle, make sure that threads that have wandered into the aftermain at some point can get out without.
It's not just a blunt.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, so there's a lot to it. It's pretty expensive to go in.
It is.
And do that because a lot of code and body to go and change the world.
Understood.
Yeah. And so that's actually one of the reasons why we don't do it on a per assembly basis, because it's pretty difficult to get it right, actually.
Are there any architectural tricks or best practices that you'd recommend? You know, since you know the inside of this.
So the number one thing, do not use load from unless you really have to. Use assembly load whenever possible.
Okay, that begs the question: when would I use load from?
Okay, so if your assembly is not in the GAC or the application base, or there's no other nice way to find it, then you just have a path. Then you can use load from.
Okay.
But even if you use load from, then that doesn't mean you want to use a load from context. So they're not the same thing. That's also.
And what context are we speaking about? App domain context?
Yeah. So in each app domain, then there's different binding contexts. So there's the load context, the load from context, and there's something that I call the neither context, which means it's neither the load or the load from context.
Okay.
And it's something that the loader itself handles and not Fusion. Hmm. And so I recommend usually that people use the load context. So basically, it should be in the GAC or the application base for the app domain.
Okay.
But if it's not there, then what you could do is load by path, but set up your app domain so that the application base points to that path anyway. And then you can still use load from, but it'll be put in the load context. Mm-hmm. And things will just work nicely. But if you use load from context, then there's like some trickiness to it, and you have to understand what it's doing, and it's more complicated than you usually want to get involved with.
Okay. So it's just there for extreme cases.
Yeah, there's some cases where it really is the only way to do it, and then you can go ahead and use in that case, but don't just use it by default. I find that a lot of people are used to loading by path, and so they want to use load from, and automatically they use the load from context. They haven't set up the app domain correctly, and that turns into problems. They run into found exceptions they didn't expect. But
understood. So now obviously, there's got to be tons of documentation out there for this app domain thing, right? App domain and its assemblies. Uh-huh. So, MSDN, your blog.
Yeah, so the number one place I would say my blog, because MSDN still needs to be updated with the new information. So
your blog is the place to go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's blog.msdn.com, WAC.
Suze Cook.
Suze Cook. And we'll put a link up to it on. And Robert will start linking to your blog and his blog.
Right.
It's a little geekier than my audience usually is.
Wait a minute.
You're a geek. We only put geeks on.
He calls everybody geeks. I'm a geek, according to him.
Right. Anybody who builds things is a geek.
All right.
It's a broad term. Let's see here. Gotcha.
How do you ensure that, so in other words, you're saying you can't, I can create several instances of the same assembly, obviously, mm-hmm. doesn't matter. But there is a way for me to track if a specific instance of assembly is running, clearly.
So
wouldn't that be useful?
Yeah, so I guess it depends on what you mean. There's, you can, we can tell from the assembly object if it's equal to some other assembly object, but you could actually load the same bits multiple times in the same apt main.
Okay.
As many times as you want, actually. So, within the boundaries of the process. But
I'm not sure why they want to do that.
Well, so some people like to do that because if they want to recompile the assembly and have mm-hmm. it reloaded without having to use a different apt main, then they can make it work by using the neither context and reloading it there. But yeah, usually I recommend you don't do that. You should just create a new apt main.
So now let's talk about apt mains for a second, because we've been throwing the term around a lot.
Okay.
There'll be people watching this video who don't really quite grasp that concept yet. So an apt main is basically a context, right?
Yeah,
that consists of assemblies that are bound to that context.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not a process, right?
Yeah,
so what exactly is it?
Yeah, it's just conceptually a mini process.
The apt main is a mini process.
Yeah, that's how.
So it's like a thread.
Well, no, because you can have multiple threads going in and out of the apt main, so it's not really the same thing.
Okay.
It's originally it was meant to be like a lightweight process, but not.
That's changed.
It's not quite like that, but.
Okay. Now it's a big, lightweight process.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's the root of all managed running things, correct?
Yeah, you'll have, you automatically have an optimine when you're running managed code. You get the default optimine automatically, and then you can create other optimines if you like.
Okay.
If you had an MVP here for the first time, visiting campus or whatnot, who would you take them to see in the team, or what would you show them?
Oh, okay. Just to see the most. Oh, I'd take them to see Chris Broom, probably, because he has one of the more popular blogs, and he's one of the more senior architects. Mm-hmm. And it depends on what topics he's interested in. There's some other really cool people here. Patrick is our GC architect, and we have a lot of really smart people here. So.
Yeah.